Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got funny.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. It is, and I had him one other year, which was last year. So now we can start calling it a yearly or annual Brian McInnes episode. It's from the Honolulu Star Advertiser, Brian McInnes. How's it going, Brian?
Hey, it's going good, Owen. Appreciate you having me back on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. I always appreciate your insight into basketball at Hawaii and in the Big West. And I think we're going to talk about mostly men's, but some women's basketball too, as Hawaii is a top favorite in the Big West Conference as well in women's hoops. But I want to start with men's hoop, where Hawaii had a coaching change. Benji Taylor was out after being the interim head coach last season. And we have a new coach in Hawaii from St. Mary's. Is that correct?
Yeah, former St. Mary's assistant, kind of worked his way up to associate head coach, Aran Ganot. He was also a former Hawaii assistant. He's kind of bounced between those two programs. Still a young guy, 34 years old. People have said he's probably the oldest 34-year-old they've ever come across. He really just conducts himself like a much more mature guy, but he loves Hawaii. He was ecstatic about coming back here, and a little bit turbulent times over here for him to come into. I think it's fair to say over the last couple of years with the investigation and interim head coach Benji Taylor. So he's looking forward to getting his own his own tenure started over here.
Well, and I'm just stoked that I talked to you mostly so I can pronounce his name the right way, because there were lots of options for me to go with it, right? You know, there's Aran Ganot, you could have said, but it's Aran Ganot is how you want to pronounce it. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. It's not French, although you'd be forgiven for thinking so. There have been a lot of people who have said it that way before learning otherwise. So Aran Ganot is the guy, and I'm sure more and more people will learn his name as we go.
What's your general impression of him? First impression, I guess, as you've been covering him now for this preseason this year.
Yeah, so I knew him from his previous tenure here as an assistant for a couple years under Bob Nash, and he's a very meticulous person. He doesn't believe in rushing into any decision. You know, takes his time with it, thinks things out to the nth power. Sometimes it seems like it's some people might kind of want him to speed up in terms of some aspects of decision making, but that's just the way he does things. And he's all about trying to surround himself with the best people possible. He's always talking about character and those values. So we'll see if that translates to success here in the early going for him.
Right. He comes in and gets a Hawaii team that is without a doubt really talented. Of course, we all know that Aaron Valdez can score. We know Isaac Fleming's a player. I'm just looking at the roster right now. Stefan Jovanovic. There's a lot of talent that he does inherit at Hawaii, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He kind of came into a pretty good situation from that standpoint. Depth is a little bit of a concern. I think there's some, drop off there after some of the guys you mentioned. Plus like Isaac Fleming, talented combo guard, is around as well. Roderick Bobbitt at point guard led the country in steals, Big West Defensive Player of the Year last year. So definitely he's got some, good guys, experienced guys to work with. It's just been a matter of, can he get them to, buy into his system and schemes, because they are running a different offense now. It's a four out, one in style, one kind of post player, operating at any given time, but everyone else on the perimeter. And defensively, they're not quite as, not quite as gung-ho as far as, this rabid constant pressure, which, some fans really were looking forward to seeing more of, but they're a little more disciplined, a little more, I guess, responsible, cognizant of overall responsibility and not leaving the guy in the back out to dry on some of that.
Yeah, I thought Benji Taylor, the interim coach last year, kind of acquitted himself pretty well by giving this team kind of a focus, I guess, which, like you said, was kind of the rabid, just insane, you know, high tempo pressing, you know, not caring about how many points anybody scores in the end, kind of a pace, which was, you know, whenever you have that extreme, I guess I'll put it this way, whenever you have that extreme case of just kind of this is what we do, right? Cal Poly has had it too in the opposite direction, you know, in past years, where, you know, they just say, you know what, we're gonna have like very few possessions. This is just what we do and how we do it. It's really easy for fans to look at it and say, you know, we're imposing our will on them, right? And so, you know, like you said, it's interesting that there were a number of fans that did get behind, you know, that kind of a system, that kind of a pace in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. And those kind of contrasts of styles between Hawaii and Cal Poly last year were maybe some of the most interesting in the league, just because you had, you know, two polar opposites in that respect, as far as, you know, one valuing the ball to an extreme and the other one trying to take away the ball to an extreme. And so that was interesting. And so, like I said, you know, they're not kind of quite as be as free flowing and, you know, freelancing, I guess, as they were last year. Little more discipline there. They struggled a little bit in their exhibition against Chaminade over here last week. You know, got down 22 points in the first half, were able to come back and win in overtime, but kind of raised a few eyebrows. You know, people are used to seeing them beat the other local D2 teams over here.
Right, absolutely. I was thinking, you know, in Joe Calero's first year, I think they lost to Cal State Monterey Bay in an early game, either a preseason or I don't even think it was an exhibition. I think it was just a game, and they lost to them. You know, as a new coach comes in, you know, they're trying to impose their will, and there's going to be some growing pains, which is one of the reasons why I think I put Hawaii maybe fifth or sixth in my preseason poll. But a lot of people say, you know, Hawaii has the talent, and I agree with this, you know, to be a Big West champion. I just think with a new coach the first year, there's always some growing pains, there's always some learning curves, and while all those guys are super talented, they're not guys that Iran, hopefully I pronounced that right, you know, recruited himself. And so it takes, you know, so much adjusting all along the way. And it's just really hard, I think, the first year in a program under a new coach.
Yeah, all valid points. I've seen some of those growing pains firsthand. It's, you know, practice just about every day. So, and they did have a little bit of a kind of chemistry lapse with Isaac Fleming, the guard I mentioned. He was kind of away from the team for, you know, 1.5 weeks or so of practice. Kind of, they called it a leave of absence for personal issues officially. But he's, you know, back in the fold and working with the second team. That's just kind of an example of, you know, hammering out some of those new expectations from this new coach, because Fleming was a guy who, you know, he picked up like 5 technical fouls last year,
right?
Kind of represented Hawaii leading the league in text year. They were able to just kind of, you know, mouth off to officials or whoever and more or less, you know, got away with it. And the new coach isn't having that. So we'll see if, you know, everyone falls in line over the course of the whole season, like you said. It seems like pretty much everyone else on the team is bought in. Aside from that, you know, that one kind of curious situation with Fleming, which was never overtly explained, but you could chalk up to chemistry between coach and player, and perhaps some teammates. So I think they've moved on from that, and you know, they're at more or less full strength for their season opener.
Got it. Yeah, I know that when in the previous coach's tenure at Cal Poly, I think I was at the final game, and Cal Poly's, you know, star point guard, Lorenzo Keeler at the time, you know, was a guy who kind of walked off the court, like untucked his shirt, just kind of like, you know, didn't shake anybody's hand after the game. You know, everybody just kind of walked off the court with their head down that year. And I thought that, you know, the thing that happened that was really interesting to me was the after the game, every game the following year, you know, the players were walking around high-fiving the whole crowd at Mott. I mean, Mott's not a big place, but, you know, they were making sure that they're, you know, thanking the fans. There's like, you know, there's kind of like a cultural change there. And those are things that the first year for a head coach, you know, that you can kind of see sometimes tangibly, sometimes in communication with media, sometimes in communication with fans, or, you know, kind of how that looks. Sometimes it's a body language thing too. you know, in terms of who's buying in and how you know, how quickly and how much they're buying in as well.
Right, right. And, you know, like I said, Coach Gannat is a big kind of guy on character, and, you know, the kind of guys he's recruited so far, they're in the process of signing two in the early period that just started for 2016. Those guards are both kind of, you know, considered, at least for everything I've heard, to be high character kids. And one's from Australia. That's an area that Coach Gannat is really trying to start his own pipeline, where he came from, St. Mary's.
I was going to say, I went up and saw Pauly play against them a couple of years ago. And there's a gentleman by the name of Matthew Dellavedova who was who's pretty good.
Right. You know, Ron really talks up his time as an assistant there coaching Delly. That was one of the guys he got to work with, and knows Patty Mills pretty well. And so he's really got a blueprint there to work off of. Even a lot of the stuff they're running is really similar to what St. Mary's did with that four out, one in scheme. So you can maybe call them, you know, St. Mary's West if you want.
Yeah. Well, closer to Australia than California is.
This is true, and definitely something they've you know, used as part of their recruiting pitch to some of the Aussies down there.
For sure, and you already have at least a couple players from Melbourne, right, on the roster?
Right. Those are guys that Coach Gannat added, you know, this offseason. One's a redshirt from Auburn, so he's not going to play this year. The other one is a walk-on they picked up late in the year, so you're not really going to see either of those guys this season.
Okay.
But he just wanted to kind of start that pipeline.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least roster-wise, you know, on the list, he's got something to show for it.
Yeah, it's not a bummer when you can get an SEC transfer who's 6'9", 215. I wanted to ask you about I've been kind of putting together my Big West preview that hopefully will come out tonight or first thing tomorrow, kind of ahead of the games tomorrow on Friday. But I wanted to ask you about transfers in general in this conference. I know Hawaii has benefited from transfers in the past and obviously continue to with the Auburn transfer. I see a number of, you know, schools that are either have transfers that are becoming eligible this year. Long Beach State always has really good transfers.
Right.
You know, Fullerton and Northridge are, you know, their rosters are essentially built on transfers on some level. Northridge this year, you know, going to have a lot of transfers who are sitting on the bench, probably like a starting five of transfer guys who are, you know, from major colleges, a lot of them too. Cal Poly has a couple of, you know, forward transfers coming in this year. You've been covering college sports and college basketball for a while now. Can you just like speak to the transfer game and how that's changed and how coaches have to kind of adjust to the current climate where I think somebody told me there were over 600 Division I transfers this past year?
Yeah, well, I mean, it does really seem to be, you know, a bit of a troublesome aspect, especially in college basketball. There's a just this kind of self-perpetuating culture of, you know, if I'm not getting mine, then, you know, I'm going to look elsewhere and maybe I'll have more luck there. That's kind of the trend that's, you know, seems like year by year, there's more and more transfers. I don't know if it's kind of leveled off. I haven't looked at those exact numbers, but yeah, like you said, Hawaii is a program that's, you know, had some of its key guys in recent years come from other Division I programs. I mean, a guy like Christian Stan Hardinger a couple years ago. You know, even Brandon Spearman played at another school to start his career before going to junior college. So it's kind of the reality of, you know, this day and age. I think there's a little bit of a trickle-down effect as far as, you know, guys at more success or more traditionally successful power conference programs. I mean, there's, you know, we see that gap widening, especially in football. And I think, you know, basketball too, to an extent, you just don't see a whole lot of mid-majors making a whole lot of noise these days. I mean, you know, you got your Wichita States and they had some success, especially a couple of years ago, but, you know, by and large, I mean, it's the power conference teams and there's going to be guys at those schools that, you know, just aren't getting the playing time. And I think that's just going to feed into conferences like the Big West, taking those guys in. I mean, you named, you know, about half the teams in the league, if not more, owing some success to those guys in Long Beach State in particular. So I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. And it's not always a bad thing. I mean, a lot of those guys are just looking for a second chance and make good on it. UH has a guy called Sai Tumala, graduate student from Arizona State. So at least in his case, you know, he got his degree there.
Right.
He's just looking to cap his career with a little more opportunity because he was an end of the bench guy. So it's not always a bad thing, especially in a guy like his case.
Yeah, Northridge has a guy from Eastern Michigan who I think who's in the same boat. Played 4 years there, played, you know, 3 years there, and then headed to Northridge this year. I think he's a forward. I was talking to Coach Taylor at Fullerton a couple days ago, and you know, Fullerton's one of the schools that definitely has a lot of transfers too. You know, he said, you know, I think his words were it sucks the transfer game. You know, he talked about being at Arizona State himself. I think under Herb Sendek, and you know, the springtime and how. You know, it was always just super nervous making for coaches in the springtime to not know who was going to stay at school. You know, hey, so is so-and-so not happy with their playing time, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's definitely an interesting part of the whole recruiting plan at large, I guess, you know, when you talk about having to recruit guys, and Coach Taylor talked a lot about that and having to kind of adjust, you know, recruiting guys, recruiting transfers, recruiting, you know, freshmen and JUCO guys, kind of all, you know, all different parts of recruiting. It's not like you can kind of focus on one or the other, especially if you're, you know, a Big West school. A lot of these schools have desirable destinations too, in terms of close to home in LA. I imagine Hawaii is an exotic destination that way as well. It's an interesting thing for sure. Who, you know, at the top of the Big West, I guess I have some mixed feelings in terms of where I voted and who I voted where in terms of the preseason media poll. You know, Irvine is, I think, the clear number one. Everybody you talk to says Irvine, and they're well deserved. You know, they lost Will Davis, right?
Will Davis,
yeah.
Right.
But beyond that, I mean, they just have so much talent, so much depth. You know, Luke Nelson's amazing. You know, so many guards who are good along with their big men. You know, they get a lot of press from Mamadou Njai, and again, rightfully so. They have a couple of other 6'10", 6'11" beasts in there. But when it comes down to it, those guys got to have players who can get it to them, and their guards, you know, I think Irvine's just the most balanced team, you know, in general. But I think you could make arguments 2 through 5 or 2 through 6 for lots of other teams, kind of to be right there. What's your read on kind of the preseason and looking at teams on paper as you have maybe so far this year?
Yeah, so I agree. Irvine's kind of, you know, you got to respect them as the favorite entering this whole thing. And from what I hear, Mamadou even has a little bit more of an offensive game.
I'm sure.
We'll see if that bears out. But and hopefully he can stay healthy. It was a shame, you know, he kind of missed most of the regular season Big West last year.
Yeah.
You know, I had Santa Barbara number 2, even though, you know, Big Al is gone. I think behind a guy like Michael Bryson, I think they'll have, you know, that go-to guy and be able to at least stay in that, you know, probably top 3. I did pick UH 3rd.
Uh-huh.
I think they will figure it out enough to kind of also be in that top 3rd of the league.
Okay.
You know, Long Beach 4 for me. I know they have a totally new starting 5, but with some pretty key D1 guys as the transfers, as we just talked about, including a guy I believe was the ACC Freshman of the Year a couple years ago. His name escapes me at the moment, but
yeah, I'll find it while you keep going.
Yeah, and you know, Cal Poly, I believe I had 5 or maybe 6. You know, I think Davis obviously takes a big drop because of losing a lot of their key guys, Torrey Hawkins first and foremost, after the great year they had last year. So I think I have them like 7. You know, Fullerton, at Riverside, I forgot, they, you know, should have a good year behind Jalen Bland, and their the forward whose name also is escaping me,
Trevor Johns.
Taylor Johns.
Taylor
right?
Johns, sorry. Yeah, Taylor Johns.
Yeah, yeah, very athletic.
Cal Poly has Trevor John on their team. Sorry. So, yeah, Taylor Johns.
Taylor Johns and Jalen Bland. That's a good 1-2 punch for Riverside. So,
yeah.
Their coach just got an extension based off, you know, the about 500 year they put together last year. And
right.
You'd like them to at least make a little bit of a leap. So,
yeah.
Like you said, I mean, it should be pretty competitive, you know, 2 through 6 to see who gets at least in that top half of the league come tournament time.
Yeah, Nick Faust is the guy at Long Beach State who was at who was at Maryland before. And definitely, you know, will be a player. Dan Munson's always got his teams. You know, I look at like Santa Barbara and I look at Long Beach State, and maybe Irvine's starting to get there now. But like, you know, even in down years, like I can't pick Long Beach State like lower than fourth. It's just really hard for me to like think about picking like any of these teams. And I'm not saying Long Beach State's going to have a down year either, but like, you know, between Long Beach State and Santa Barbara, Irvine now, you know, like I said, clearly number one, you know, it's definitely a conference that I think is deeper top to bottom, right?
Yeah, for sure. And on the topic of Long Beach, I remember reading a quote from Dan Monson in the kind of in the Big West preview that they put out, and he sounded like legitimately disgusted that they weren't, you know, kind of winning the league like they were just a handful of years ago, and that he feels like that's where they should be, like every single year.
Totally.
But I thought that was interesting, seeing that they hadn't really been overly competitive the last couple of years. I guess that's one way to get your guys fired up, huh?
Yeah, I mean, Munson's one of my favorites to, like, watch during a game. The way he, you know, some games, you know, most games he actually doesn't make faces at the refs. He's more mad at his own players, you know, and the faces are, like, towards his guys who are doing things he just can't believe sometimes. But he's one of the more animated and more fun, you know, coaches to watch, you know, when it comes to you know, all kinds of things. And you know, I sit and take pictures kind of towards the end on the baseline, towards the visitors bench there at Mott, and get a chance to kind of see and hear, you know, the different styles there. It's an interesting thing to look at. Who do you think has kind of the highest range of places that they could finish? You know, when I guess, you know, like you said, two through six kind of seems kind of pretty wide ranged. Sometimes I think of, you know, when I saw, you know, four or five potential starters at Cal Poly sitting on the end of the bench last season, including, you know, a Gonzaga transfer, a Minnesota transfer, Zach Gordon, who is, you know, a 6'9 guy who, you know, is kind of a role player, but, you know, another redshirt freshman in Trevor John, who's shooting now. Reese Morgan sometimes was down there last year, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I kind of thought to myself, man, that's like, you know, it's like 3'6", 8" and above guys who can play. Then again, this league is guard driven. I kind of think Cal Poly is kind of a wide ranging team, but you tell me. I mean, as somebody who has maybe a little bit more perspective and maybe not the Mustang green goggles on that I might have.
That's okay. Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible. It sounds like there's a lot of wild cards that play at Poly this year. I would maybe go back to Long Beach, honestly. I think that thing could combust potentially with, you know, so many new guys kind of thrown in together.
Right.
So they maybe it all comes together for them and they do really well and even contend for the regular season title, or it kind of goes the way it's gone for them in recent years where, you know, guys are button heads and they don't really figure it out. So that would be kind of my pick for that question.
The Tyler Lamb experiment wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. I watched that guy at UCLA and he was amazing at UCLA his freshman year. And I'm thinking to myself, Long Beach got that guy. And then you watch him. I mean, he didn't even play, you know, most of the game at Cal Poly last year.
Yeah. 2 years ago, you know, he at least played and, you know, was in the backcourt there with Mike Caffey. And then, yeah, like you said, last year, he could barely get on the court. So I think there was a lot of disappointment with the way their year shook out.
Yeah.
There was the last couple of years of shaken out. And I wanted to ask you, you know, Brian Bennett, I didn't even see him on the nomination list in the preseason. What's his deal at Poly right now?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So he had some foot injuries and, you know, in the off season and beginning of the season, I think he had like, you know, some rolled ankles kinds of things. You know, when you're a big guy, that's not easy. And, so he, you know, I don't think he was able to do much running or anything else. And he's still kind of working his way back into shape right now, I think. So, you know, I don't know how much you'll actually, he played a little bit in the scrimmage that they, or not the scrimmage, sorry. I'm not allowed to go to scrimmages apparently. JD Scroggin was quick to, to correct me on that one.
All right.
Yeah, but at the exhibition that they played last week, Bennett got a little bit of time, but he's still trying to run his way back into shape, I think, basically. And it may be another month, honestly, before he gets there. He's got a little ways to go. And so, you know, when you have, I mean, honestly, it's this transfer game that we talked about. You know, the last couple of years, Brian's been it, and he's been in good shape, and he has a developed offensive game, I guess, has since he was a freshman, really. But when you got Josh Martin, who's coming in, Seattle kid, who I think probably Joe Calero knew from when he was in high school, who went to Minnesota, who's coming, you know, who's going to be eligible like in December at some point for Cal Poly. He's a real high flyer, kind of some vicious dunks in high school that you can like look up a video of. You know, he's definitely going to be an interesting player to watch. Luke Meikle is a Gonzaga transfer who sat on the bench all year last year at the end in civilians, who's a 6'9" stretch four, can shoot the three, can, you know, scored inside some the other day too against a pretty long Division II team in San Bernardino. Cal State San Bernardino was a pretty beefy, long, like athletic Division II team. It was kind of strange, but definitely gave Cal Poly a little bit of a test. Meikle looked pretty good against those guys. Again, Zach's back off the bench and provides, you know, real good defense and rebounding. So, you know, Brian's not just going to kind of find his way back on the court really easily in his senior year, which is an interesting story unto itself, right? He's definitely kind of got the, you know, he can knock down the 17 footer really nicely. He's got a nice, like I said, a nice little post game. With so many other offensive options this year, you know, Reese is still there. Ridge Shipley is still there. You know, there's a Joel Awich I didn't even mention, right? So
right.
Pauly's got a logjam up front, you know, with Awich and Gordon and Meikle and Martin. I mean, you know, those are four guys who could be your four-man rotation down low, you know, even without Brian. So Brian's got to work his way back in to shape, I believe. And so that's where I see that one at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I guess it's a good problem to have. Calero said he's got his master's in counseling, and he's happy to play counselor if he has to with guys for playing time.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. You know, this year's Calero is really his most deep, most athletic team, maybe the most athletic team Cal Poly's ever had, with some of these guys who are transfers and coming back. You know, they're going to have two or three three-point shooters on the floor at all times. They're going to have guys like, you know, Joel and Josh Martin and et cetera, who are going to be able to score. It's going to be interesting to see because, you know, Calero's in his, I think, fifth year this year, and he's finally got kind of all the pieces that he that he wants. I think Reese Morgan was one of his first big recruits, and Reese is in his fifth year now a senior. He's that guy who's just around forever, right? It'll be really interesting to see if Pauly can make that next step. And Joe's talked about running the ball more too, which is, you know, kind of like what you were talking about, going from a super high fast pace to, you know, something a little more controlled. Pauly's going from the controlled to having more possessions per game. They're committed to moving the ball and pushing it up the court a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see what that means for turnovers, what that means for field goal percentage, what that means for kind of how games flow. But he said, if I finally have the horses, he said, you know, if you have the horses to win the race, then you can race that race, to paraphrase what he said. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. You know, 1 through 11 or so are guys that can play at Cal Poly. They have a couple freshmen, one who's actually going to get some playing time off the bench, Jalen Shedd, a lefty from Texas again. Jamal Johnson was a lefty from Texas too. So Jalen's a little bit more athletic, a little bit more explosive. You know, as a point guard there too, probably not as developed a shooter as Ridge Shipley yet, but you know, a kid who can definitely move it in the open floor as well. Not to give you like the complete scouting report, but there you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So it'll be, you know, again, it'll be interesting to see. There's a lot of unknowns in this conference, Brian. I don't know how to make heads or tails of it on some level, except just to like watch as much of the preseason as I can, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, I'm filing that stuff away. I mean, before you know it, it'll be conference time, And shoot, I'll be interested to see where a lot of those guys you mentioned check in at that point, whether, you know, Bennett's on track to be a meaningful player again, and whether Ridge, you know, can kind of expand what the steps he's taken in his career so far. So, should be a pretty competitive conference here. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, with Awich as a senior, and you know, all those other guys, I thought to myself, like, does Brian just, like, you know, does he try to get on the court? But, you know, I don't know that you can, like, just take the season off as a redshirt. I mean, he never redshirted. You know, mm-hmm. Do you get your foot right as a big man? I think it's hard to graduate if you're an athlete in 4 years anyway. You know, do you just take the season off? I don't think you do. But, like, you know, it'll be really interesting to see. I mean, there's always injuries in the, you know, early part of the season. A deep team, you know, is going to go through some things. And, you know, I think the faster pace is going to be the thing that people notice about Cal Poly. They play UNLV on Friday night, and UNLV likes to run too. So, as Joe said, you can't just say you're going to do something one way and then just, like, take your foot off the gas. Sometimes we're trying to get this new, you know, they're trying to get this new style going, and if they're going to do it, they got to do it fully. He mentioned something about how he had a junior college team at one point that was the highest scoring team in the country or something, maybe up in Seattle or somewhere. So, you know, I was kind of joking with him about it and being a little bit more flip than I maybe should have been with Calero. And he kind of looked at me and, you know, he's like, I'm serious here. This is, you know, this is happening. you know, he's serious about it. And so is Cal Poly. So again, interesting to see, what all happens. What's Hawaii's preseason schedule look like? Pretty good. Probably if you have a couple of tournaments that you're hosting over there, right?
Yeah. I mean, the highlight is always the, Hawaiian Airlines Diamond Head Classic right around Christmas time.
Right.
They do open the year with the Outrigger Hotels Rainbow Classic, which is kind of their traditional, at least name wise. That's the, you know, non-conference tournament Hawaii's always hosted.
Right.
Was more prestigious kind of, you know, back, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
When they could host teams comparable to the Maui Invitational. It dropped off. You know, they reformatted it as this kind of round robin deal to open the season.
Uh-huh.
And now the best teams come in for the Diamond Head Classic, which has, you know, ESPN TV and all that. So, once, like I said, the best teams are coming in for that. This tournament to start, you know, it's not, you know, Coastal Carolina, they NCAA tournament team the last couple of years. They got Nevada from the Mountain West, who had a down year last year. So, they opened with Montana State. So Hawaii should potentially go 2-1. At least in this tournament.
Right.
Generally, their home non-conference slate is pretty weak. They do have the luxury of being able to bring in a lot of teams to, you know, play standalone games out here.
Right.
It looks like they'll be able to feast on some of those before hitting conference play.
Right.
That's kind of the MO for the program in recent years.
They
schedule pretty weak non-conference, and then, you know, it actually ramps up a bit for conference play for the most part. So
got
I know
it.
Other programs like Long Beach, Irvine take a different tack, and I know Cal Poly UAS travel a lot. So that contrast is kind of interesting. Hawaii can, you know, that's one luxury that they have. It seems they can get some of those kind of low major teams to come in here and at least make the schedule look pretty good by piling up some relatively easy ones.
Yeah, Cal Poly's going to three games, I think, in Texas. They have currently a couple of players, Taylor Sutliff. Oh, yeah, Taylor Sutliff's the other guy off an injury who's back this year, who can, you know, shoot it really good. Not, you know, not super athletic, but plays kind of a two, just kind of a shooter out there. When you have two or three guys on your team from Texas already, they got a commit from Texas who verbally committed, who's out there as well. You know, they've been scheduling a lot of games in Texas lately too, which is kind of an interesting, like, I don't know if it's a recruiting tactic or what, but it seems to have been working for them pretty well. And then they play, you know, at UCLA, at USC this year, both places that they interestingly won the last time that they were there. I'm looking at Hawaii's scheduled. Northern Iowa is the first game that they have in the Diamond Head Classic, but there's teams out there like Auburn and New Mexico and BYU and Washington State and Oklahoma. You know, those are all like pretty solid squads out there.
Yeah. So that's when they'll really kind of be put to the test and see how they stack up against you know, some solid teams. Last year, they did pretty well in the Diamond Head. Wichita State was here. They were ranked number 11 or 12. And Hawaii took them to overtime here. That was a really exciting game under Benji Taylor.
Right.
So they'll be able to, you know, potentially turn some heads. That's really their time to shine on national TV. And that's really been a boon for the program, definitely.
Well, their first conference game is at the Stan Sheriff Center. Stan Sheriff, of course, I think a Cal Poly alum, is against Cal Poly. That'll be on the 6th of January. And until then, where can people follow you, Brian? On Twitter, is it at Brian McInnes?
Yep, it's at Brian underscore MCINNIS, my last name.
Yep.
And I do have a blog called Court Sense with the Honolulu Star Advertiser.
Okay.
So that's kind of where you can see some of my free content stuff online. The rest of it is behind a paywall on our staradvertiser.com. It's a little less accessible for people, Cal Poly fans or whoever was kind of trying to get a gauge on Hawaii. So my blog is probably the best bet.
Got it. And can you give me the web address for that one more time?
Yeah, you can actually find it at www.hawaiiwarriorworld.com. Uh-huh. And then my blog is there with a few of my coworkers in the sports department here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so check out HawaiiWarriorWorld.com. I'm looking at it right now. And there you are, Court Sense, Brian McInnes, along with Stephen Tsai, Cindy Lewis, and Dave Reardon, it looks like.
Indeed.
In your different blogs there. Very cool. All right. Well, Brian, have a great preseason covering games. It's good to have a lot of games close by. And, November and December seem like pretty fun ones if you're a basketball fan out on Oahu.
There's always something to watch out here, that's for sure.
Yeah, fantastic. I really appreciate you joining me. Real quick, when all is said and done, who goes to the tournament this year?
Oh, man, putting me on the spot. gosh.
I know anybody could right now. It's
so wide open. I mean, I'm sure if there's any Hawaii fans listening to this, they'll want me to say Hawaii, which is, it's entirely possible. They got to the title game last year, but, for the sake of being a little off the wall, I'm going to say a team maybe not too many people would expect, like, I don't know, UC Santa Barbara. We'll just go with that.
Okay. Yeah, I think, people are sleeping on Riverside. If they can, if their support players can be in, I think I picked them fourth this year just because Taylor Johns, I think, is the best player in the conference. And I think when you have the best player that, you may have a good chance there. But I think anybody one through six, like the first 2/3 of the conference, could upset some people and make life hard for everybody else. And as usual, it's going to be all about matchups and health and other things. So anyway, Brian, I really appreciate you joining me, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Owen. Take care, man.
Thanks.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. Love can't find my way around Trouble Town. Signs out on